Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
Hey, fellas, it's Mike again. That's going to be my handle when I call in. Mike again. Just calling to talk about who the Bulls ought to take with the 7th pick. Put a lot of thought into this. And I think that Gar Pax, with the 7th pick, should take a long walk off a short fucking pier.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports, College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO here in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. Want to get all your reactions from last night's, last night's disappointment. 331-979-1369. We're already loading up with a lot of voicemails. Need all of your reaction there. So if you want to text us, you want to drop a voicemail in for us, send it there. 331-979-1369. They fucking did it. Of course they fucking did it. Out of anything that would happen last night, of course they slide down, and the Kings, who win the coin flip, end up with a top two pick in this draft after after trading Boogie, less than two seasons ago. They're going to get a franchise-changing center once again. This is the most classic Bulls thing I could ever... I should have known. We should have honestly known. We played ourselves, Matt.
It's called congratulations. You played yourself. Congratulations. You played yourself.
And I think a lot of Bulls fans out there yesterday, too, on Twitter, with the good vibes, that didn't last a whole lot longer than past 8 o'clock last night. So what are you doing? What's up, Matt? Are you all right? I'm glad to hear that you're alive today.
What's going on, Jordan? Bulls Nation. Yeah, it's a tough day. Tough day. I was just telling you this before we hopped on the mics. I was secretly worried that this would happen. I was trying to be optimistic. I was trying to stay in a positive frame of mind, as I have all year long as we've gone through this rebuild. And I just had this nagging little feeling in the back of my head. I was like, not only do I think it's not going to happen for the Bulls getting into the top three, I think we might get boned and slide a spot or two. I just had that bad feeling. And maybe it's because I've been trying so hard to be optimistic recently that it's just, you know, some of those bad thoughts crept into the back of my mind. But I will say this in addition to that. Of course, Bulls Twitter is a crazy place. And Bulls Twitter is so quick to jump to conclusions and so quick to assume disaster and assume the worst. And I am not, there's this growing conspiracy that all of a sudden I've become some sort of Gar Pax apologist. And I have not. I have absolutely not. And you can judge a lot of what Paxson said in his post-draft lottery remarks last night. And you could judge a lot of what they have done in a negative light. However, the Bulls' fate was not decided last night. The Bulls' fate was not decided that last night, and that is not me saying, well, hey, look what John Paxson said. Like, they got Markkanen at 7 last year. Maybe they'll get another stud player at 7 this year. No, every draft is different. And the Bulls still have work to do. And the Bulls still will be judged on what this pick becomes as a part of this rebuilding core. But that was not decided last night. Makes me think of that Mitch Hedberg joke. He's like, dude, I saw this wino eating grapes the other day. And I was like, dude, you have to wait. Bulls fans are so quick to jump to conclusions and assume that disaster is happening right now, right here, in our faces. And all went to shit last night because we slid from 6th to 7th. Take a pause. Take a freaking breath before you assume that the worst is here. The end is nigh and that the rebuild is a gigantic failure. Yeah, I'm bummed. I'm bummed that we didn't jump into the top three. And in the weird, ironic twist of fate that had the Bulls and the Kings been flipped at 6 and 7 after that tiebreaker, that the Bulls would have had the combinations that went to the Kings that wound up being the number two pick. Yeah, it's a weird, unfortunate, shitty coincidence that that's how things shaked out. But nothing was decided last night. Bulls fans need to remind themselves.
That's what I think gets me, and maybe there's some Bulls fans that are angry just in general that they didn't end up in the top three, but I think that's the ultimate slap in the face, is that you win the coin toss against the Kings in the final game of the season where the Kings had to win in order to take over that spot from the Bulls. You end up in a tiebreaker with them. You win the coin toss. You get the better percentage of getting a top three pick and a number one overall. And then you get slapped in the face by the Kings taking that and getting a top two pick. I think that's where the frustration and just kind of the laughability of this is classic Bulls. Like I should have known that this was going to happen. And I think you're right, though. I think moving from 6 to 7, I don't think it's all that big of a deal, especially if what we were talking about in terms of the players that we think are going to get drafted there or the ones that the Bulls are interested in. I don't think it changes all of that much, right? I think the guys that really the Bulls are probably going to be interested in are Michael Porter Jr., Mikal Bridges, Mohamed Bamba if he slides, which I don't know if that's going to happen. Now he's gotten a lot of hype over the last couple of weeks. Could see him going in the top five. But then you've got Wendell Carter Jr. too, who's been talked up a lot. So all it takes is, I think, in this draft, one team to make a radical move in that top five for things to start to change. Over the next couple of weeks, over the next month, 6 weeks till we get to the draft, a lot can change. Teams can see players and not like guys slide down on draft boards. It happens every year. And then you turn around in the first NBA season, you see guys that are taken later in the draft or taken over by other guys that end up being busted to the top of the draft. My thing is here too. Somebody brought up this point too. There's a lot. Do you feel like you can make a bigger mistake in the top three? Maybe not necessarily this draft, but in consensus of the NBA draft overall, Mats, do you feel like you can make a bigger mistake in the top three than maybe at where the Bulls are at 6 or 7, now being at 7? I feel like the more sure thing, and I know the top player and the talent is completely different at the top three than maybe what you would get at 6 or 7. Do you feel it's overall, would you have trusted the front office to make the right decision in the top three? And this is not to say that, you know, a trade still could be on the table to try and move into the top three. Like we've said and like we've heard a bunch of different times, the Bulls secretly are in love with Marvin Bagley. That's one name that I feel like has been a connection to this Bulls the entire season. Gar Forman has seen him multiple times play. You could say that about a lot of other prospects, but if I had an inclination of why the Bulls might trade up, if there's a possibility that one of those teams wants to trade down or Wendell
stop.
Or
stop.
Marvin.
Stop. We cannot go down that rabbit hole. I'm sorry. Nobody's trading down. Here's a fair warning. If you send in a mailbag question asking about the Bulls, you know, throwing that 22 pick from the Nico trade and their number 7 pick in, trying to stop. You're wasting your time thinking about something that's not happening because nobody's trading down. Let's end that right there. It's not happening.
I still think you're whack that you think that there's no possible way that the Bulls could maybe find a way to move up if they really like somebody. Like, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility with the amount of cap flexibility that Atlanta has, too. And I know, I get it. Like, what free agents are going to want to go to Atlanta with, what, driving in 500 fans and being one of the worst teams in basketball this year? I get that, too. But to rule out the possibility, say nobody's going to trade down. We've seen crazier things happen. All right.
Wasted breath, man. Wasted breath. Okay, you and I can sit down at these mics again and talk on a Locked On Bulls episode after somebody above the Bulls trades down a month from now. And I will sit here and I will say, I'm sorry, Jordan. You were right and I was wrong. Somebody traded down. When that doesn't happen, because that's clearly not going to happen, I will sit here and laugh.
Oh, I can't wait for that, because think about the teams in the front offices that are above the Bulls. Orlando, Dallas, Memphis, Atlanta, Sacramento, and Phoenix. I wouldn't put it out of the realm of possibility.
This is not the NFL. What the hell are we talking about here? This is not the NFL. Nobody above, I mean, I'm sorry. I think it's ridiculous that we're even talking about this. Nobody above the Bulls is trading down.
All right, well, Nobody. Let's get to the NBA draft as an event last night on TV. It was pretty fucking brutal. Let's just put it that way. The entire presentation from start to finish was the most awkward thing I think I've ever watched in terms of a presentation from any professional sports event. From the start at 6:30, when we thought we were going to get the announcement, where they drew it out. I liked some of the segments where they were talking to some of the prospects. The interviews were really awful. The interviews were awkward. The guys didn't look like they were prepped. And the overall presentation of the entire lottery draft, it was extremely brutal, extremely awkward. And I could do away with it. Hey, you know what? Spend 15 minutes on TV before you start this game, the game two against the Celtics and the Cavaliers, and you announce the picks. Like this make you stretch out and wait 45 minutes, and then they take a break. I get it. I know you told me this the other day, and I don't.
It's a terrible television event. I feel like we all have felt that for a while now, that it is. Not even 5 minutes worth of information being revealed, and they stuff 55 minutes of filler and commercials around it. And not only is it unnecessarily long and drawn out, but I mean, as you were saying, the production quality was poor. Like, you know, let me preface this by saying this has absolutely nothing to do with the gender of this person. I've never been a fan of Cassidy Hubbarth and her ability to interview people. I think she's not that great. She clearly was not well prepared or not uncomfortable with the lack of prep that they had for that event last night, because all of her interviews were awkward and poorly executed. All of them. Bobby Marks is a great Twitter follow if you want to learn about things going on with the NBA cap and teams and salaries and contract negotiations. The dude knows his stuff. As a TV person, that dude should never be on TV ever again. His couple of segments where they tossed it to him and he was going on that, you know, using that interactive video board, that guy looked like he was about to hurl and was being interrogated for murder. That guy does not belong on TV. Great Twitter follow, knows his stuff. Do not put that guy on TV ever again. Mina Kimes, who had that cool, like, in-depth look at Luka Doncic, the audio quality was terrible. Sounded like she recorded it while she was talking on her cell phone, driving through, you know, a busy, windy highway, windows down. It was terrible audio. Like, what was that we watched? Across the board, it was awful. If that's the best you can do, turning that event into an hour-long television event, scrap it. Just scrap it and tell us the results. Tweet them out one by one from the official NBA Twitter profile, for all I care. But do not subject us, there's that word, do not subject us to another year of that, because that's either do better or scrap it, because that was garbage.
Look, I like Cassidy Hubbarth. I think she's really good at what she does, and I think this is more to blame on the setup and the way that they were trying to drive this as a television show and stretch this out. I also think she didn't get a whole lot of help from anybody else that was either sitting up at that panel and representing their team or the players that she was interviewed. Like I said, I think that's partly on the agent's fault, partly on the NBA, partly on ESPN for not fully prepping those guys for questions. And it was kind of awkward, and I don't think I blame her for most of what went on. I think it's hard when you're up there trying to not only make this event fun and try to, I guess, I don't know, be creative with it and the way ESPN had it set up, I would blame more the network and the way that they broke this down rather than her. Like, I think her hands were tied when, like, look, she was asking people questions and getting awkward, weird responses from GMs and representatives of their team. Like, that, to me, I think threw me off the most. And whether or not ESPN told her that she's got to throw some of these funny questions in there or try to target more of the millennial viewer watching ESPN, like, I don't need that. And I don't feel like a lot of millennials really need that either. They can go to Twitter for all the jokes and the funny stuff if they need it. They can go to social media for that. Just show us the lottery. Don't take a fucking commercial break during a lottery reveal of 14 teams that takes a whole 30 seconds.
Of course you know they're going to do that.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll find out who's getting kicked off of Survivor right after these messages. Like, of course they're going to do that.
Yes, of course they're going to do that because they want the money. But still, like, talk about never wanting to watch an event again. I never want to watch the NBA lottery draft ever again.
It was terrible. Terrible.
You know, all the criticism that the NCAA got for their March Madness reveal and how it was getting leaked on Twitter and they would draw that out, that's another event that I was so sick of. And just give me all the teams. Just give me the bracket. Same thing with this draft lottery. Make it 30 minutes. Do whatever interviews you want to do in the first 15, 20 minutes. The last 10 minutes, just give me the reveal. That's all I need. I don't need any of this dog and pony show. I don't need any of that. Just give me the reveal last night. I think that was the most frustrating part. And this thing kind of just, I don't know, volcano erupted on ESPN and the way the production went of this show. But look at me. Look, I get your point about Cassidy Hubbard. I like her a lot. I think she's really good when they have her on the NBA playoffs and interviewing players post game. I think for the most part, she asks really great questions other than...
I think she's better than what she did last
agreed.
Night. I will say that. I don't think she is one of the worst, NBA sideline interview people that they have at that network. I think there are certainly people who are better. I put her somewhere in the middle as far as her skills as an interviewer talking hoops. Last night, and as you said, some of this might be to the fault of the lack of preparation from the network and the fact that it appeared to be very poorly organized. Last night was not her best work by a long shot.
Yeah, and to touch on Bobby Marks too real fast, like I was telling you kind of off air, I don't follow Bobby Marks on Twitter. I don't really pay attention. I get my other insider information from other Twitter accounts. Don't really pay a whole lot of attention, but he did get absolutely roasted on Twitter last night for his TV appearances. He also dropped in there, and whether you, like we were talking about this too, whether you think he actually dropped a bomb where he said the Cavs were getting the eighth pick and they end up eventually getting the eighth pick before the actual lottery reveal, I don't think was a good look. He was getting roasted for that on Twitter. But yeah, overall, I didn't think the NBA lottery draft show was great at all. I would have loved to see maybe TNT pull this off, NBA on TNT. If they were going to do like a half hour, 40 minute show, I'm all in for that. But the way ESPN had this set up.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe because they would have had a half hour full of laughs, but you know Shaq and Chuck know next to nothing about these
very
projects.
True. Very, very true. So yeah, in terms of what they were trying to do as far as the entertainment level, that would have been a lot of fun. But you're right, the level of college basketball that maybe Shaq and Charles know is like little to none.
When they do those crossovers during March Madness and they have that crew calling God. Out, it's like they clearly have no idea what they're talking about.
Oh, that's too true. All right, we got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. We're going to come back with some more reactions from the NBA lottery draft last night, maybe talk about a few prospects as well. Just getting into a conversation about what the Bulls can do. Maybe I can try and convince Matt over the next month or so that the Bulls might be able to trade up.
Not happening.
All of that and so much more here on Locked On Bulls. Stay right with us. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. And on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. Stay up to date with everything Chicago Bulls at LockedOnBulls.com. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts.
All right, as we come back and kind of wrap up Locked On Bulls, this episode here, Just want to talk about a little bit more about John Paxson's reaction to the Bulls getting number 7 last night. Some of the things that he did eventually say, maybe about what they plan on doing and who they plan on taking at that number 7 pick. Matt, most important thing you think that came out of Paxson's mouth last night, maybe that holds some truth and some value to Bulls fans out there wondering who the Bulls might take over the next 4 weeks.
Can I say nothing? Can I say nothing that Paxson said last night holds any value to what the Bulls are doing? Is that an acceptable answer? Okay. So seriously,
oh, man.
I mean, I think the quote that sheds the most light is this one right here. The two biggest things are versatility, guys that can play multiple positions, can guard multiple positions, and guys that can get where they want on the floor. Those are the players outside of shooting. Everybody loves shooting. But those two things, that's kind of the way the game is going. You see it in these playoffs. Everyone is switching. So player versatility offensively and defensively, and guys who can get where they want to on the floor. Great ball handlers, guys that can create their own shot. When you look and try to dissect what is there, and if you take Paxson for his word, that is doubling down on what he said after the season ended, which is that the Bulls are going to look to add a wing in this draft, a 3-and-D wing. Obviously, the name that people keep talking about is Mikal Bridges of Villanova, who people are wondering might be a reach, even now that the Bulls have slid to 7, might be a reach. So to me, a name that we kind of haven't really talked about as much as Mikal Bridges, because people think it's even more of a reach that he belongs more in the mid part of the first round, you know, late lottery or just outside the lottery, is Miles Bridges of Michigan State, who is 2 years younger and I think, you know, is a more of a project and has, you know, is less developed and less NBA ready than Mikal Bridges is now. But Miles Bridges, and as far as athleticism, might have a little bit of an upside there, a little bit of an edge on Mikal Bridges. So, I mean, the obvious read between the lines is the Bulls feel good about taking Mikal Bridges at 7, or maybe Michael Porter Jr., because he fits into the second part of what Paxson was saying, which is the ability to get to where they want to on the floor to create their own stuff offensively. Michael Porter Jr. can do that. Guard multiple positions? Nah, not so much. And of course, there is injury risk there as well. So, I mean, I think, as you were saying before our break, I think the Bulls right now are looking at most likely taking a big or a wing with that 7th pick and then doing the opposite at 22. Because say the Bulls do take Wendell Carter, the center from Duke, at 7, or maybe they get lucky and Mo Bamba slides to them at 7 because somebody takes a chance on Michael Porter Jr. and somebody else takes a chance on Trae Young. You know, there's a lot of talk about Orlando taking a point guard because they already have Jonathan Isaac and don't necessarily want to add another big to crowd that front court. If the Bulls take Wendell Carter, there are some other intriguing wing prospects that the Bulls might have on their board at 22nd. Notably, in my opinion, Jacob Evans of Cincinnati. So you look at what Paxson had to say, and he doubled down on the whole "we need a wing" thing. And I think that's where the Bulls will look, as well as adding a guy at the center combo power forward position who, as Paxson said, in today's modern NBA, can play and guard multiple positions. And that's talking about a big who can step outside, play some game offensively and defensively at the perimeter as well as inside.
I think all those are really good points. You bring up Mikal Bridges, Michael Porter Jr., Wendell Carter Jr. as well. Before I get to any of those, the number one person I do not want the Bulls to take at number 7, that for whatever reason the national media thinks that this guy would be perfect for the Bulls, is Trae Young. I don't want any part of Trae Young's game. The fact that I could even bear thinking about putting Trae Young next to Zach LaVine on the floor defensively, like, that would be the most hot garbage I've ever watched on an NBA floor before. Look, I get he's got tremendous upside offensively, and sure, he may work out for another team that's defensive-minded at first, and you need an explosive scorer that can shoot. Sure, Trae Young's great, but not for this Bulls team who has maybe 3 or 4 guys that can defend halfway decent. Other than that, I don't want any part of Trae Young. Now, that being said, Michael Porter Jr. obviously has become the hot take of, oh, the Bulls shouldn't take him. He's got back injuries. He can't play. I've seen that sort of narrative starting to grow more and more among other Bulls fans. And that's fine. I understand that too. The only thing I would say about him is we didn't see a whole lot from him in college. What we did see was not very good. I won't blame that on anything other than him coming back after back injury and not playing all season. His value to me is the upside is there. And if the back checks out and he's healthy, I think that's a project the Bulls can work on. And like you had said, the defensive weaknesses are there as well, but he's a guy that can create his own shot. He's huge. He's 19 years old. And a lot of times, some of these prospects, I feel like, get hyped up so much at the beginning of the season, and then people get so sick and tired of hearing about these guys that all of a sudden their value drops. It happens every single year. And so I think that's where Michael Porter Jr. sits. I would be fine if they took him too. Probably not my number one as far as who the Bulls could take as far as best fit. I was just telling you off air as well. I went through Wendell Carter Jr.'s and I was going through some of his highlights, just kind of watching his offensive game. He's a guy that's a shot blocker and I think went kind of underrated, especially in that Duke season being overshadowed by obviously the likes of Marvin Bagley as well. But he's a guy that has really good post moves, can be a shot blocker, and he's another project as well at 6'10", 260, 19 years old. I think he could be a pretty nice complement fit if the Bulls want to add a young guy to their front court alongside Lauri Markkanen. And think about a guy that can play the post, be a shot blocker and a rim protector, and that'll spread the floor for Lauri Markkanen. And so that's why I think I've gotten a little bit higher on Wendell Carter Jr. over the past couple of weeks than maybe I was on the in the past. And that's just to say that I don't really think Mo Bamba is going to be around at number seven for to even entertain the idea of taking him. And then Mikal Bridges. Obviously, Mikal Bridges checks all the boxes as far as scoring, can shoot the three, can defend. He's an obvious need at the wing position. The only thing that...
But he lacks the ball handling that Paxson was talking
that
about.
That is true.
That's the one knock on Mikal Bridges. Yes, he's a good athletic defender, and for a guy his size, he's got like an insane, you know, he's only 6'7", but he's got like a 7'2 or 7'3 wingspan, so you love that as a perimeter defender. And yes, he knocked down the three more confidently, but he's not a great ball handler, and I don't think he will ever be an elite ball handler at the NBA level. And so that's the one knock on him when you talk about the criteria that Paxson laid out last night.
And I think the thing is too, taking him, he's already had 3 years of experience in the NCAA. He's a little bit older. For me, I would rather see the Bulls take another young guy that they can work, you know, a 19-year-old. And I think age is important in terms of the trajectory of where this Bulls team is trying to go and the way that they're trying to develop. But I wouldn't be disappointed with Mikal Bridges either. I think in terms of need, what the Bulls need to do is find a guy that can play D and shoot the three, just like you had said. Now, with that 22nd pick too, Matt, if they do take a wing here, I really like Mitchell Robinson. I think that's a guy that the Bulls could add to the front court that I think has gone underrated as well, just because of the whole Western Kentucky thing and skipping a year of college basketball to train. I think that's a name that's going to fly under the radar again too. So maybe he falls. I don't know if that's going to happen. He's projected around 15 to 18 right now. If he slides in that in the draft at all and ends up at 22, I wouldn't be mad about that pick either.
When I was talking on SportsFeed like a month ago about potential maybes at that 22 pick, he's a name that I mentioned because not a whole lot of people are paying attention to him because, you know, you mentioned he had that weird thing where he unenrolled and wasn't really in the national spotlight compared to some of these other bigs. But if they do go with the wing and want to add to their front court depth and address their need at center, because Lopez is not a long-term part of the plan and Felicio looks like an unpleasant project right now, I would absolutely love it if they could get Mitchell Robinson at center. Some people are talking about him being like the best natural athlete at that position in this draft, and it's just because there's, I guess, a little bit more unknown about him than some of the other bigs that we're talking about going in the top five. But some are saying, you know, best shot blocker / rim protector in this group of bigs, 7'1", 7'4 wingspan, good size already, and is still just 20 years old. So, I mean, if the Bulls do go with the wing at seven, I absolutely would love to see them add some kind of center or center / you know, power forward for the modern NBA with that 22 pick. And I think Mitchell Robinson should absolutely be near the top of that list if you're the Bulls front office.
With that, anybody out of that top five right now as it sits, Matt, anybody, who do you feel like is the most likely to slide out of that top five of those prospects? Maybe I'm talking about DeAndre Ayton, Luka Doncic, Jaren Jackson Jr., Marvin Bagley, Mo Bamba. Out of those maybe five, six guys, who do you feel like is most likely to slide down? Maybe teams are going to pass on now that we kind of know what teams are going to be picking there. I think some of this order, the way that the draft lottery goes right now, especially that top five, is pretty interesting. Out of those five, six prospects at the top of the list for most teams, which one would you say, if you had to pick, would slide down out of that top five?
I mean, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Ayton number one. I think it's going to be Ayton and then Doncic. Bagley's probably going to go to Atlanta at three. I think Memphis will probably take Jaren Jackson Jr. at four. The one that might slide, depending on what Dallas wants to do, is Mo Bamba, and I would love it if somehow Bamba slid to the Bulls at seven, because I am coming around on him. He's definitely a project, and he has a very limited offensive game right now, but it's hard to pass up on a dude who has the athletic, the natural athletic ability that guy has. Maybe Orlando decides to take Trae Young, etc. But of the bigs, I think Bamba might slide the farthest just because he is so much of a project. I don't see some people have talked about Bagley sliding that, because overrated and defensive question marks, etc. I don't know about that. I think Jaren Jackson Jr. is a stud value for the modern NBA. Talking about a guy who can guard multiple positions and contribute all over the floor offensively for a guy playing that center/power forward position. I think if any of the big slide, it's going to be Bamba. And I still would be surprised to see the Dallas Mavericks pass on him, because I don't think that they have a long-term plan with Nerlens Noel, and they need to address their front.
You bring
court.
Up some good points, and I think the most interesting thing is really what Dallas does. Like you had said, they need somebody at that front court. And if there's a possibility where Wendell Carter Jr. has a really great combine, his name could even be tossed out there between the pick between Mohamed Bamba or Wendell Carter Jr. Definitely a factor there. You brought up Trae Young, too, maybe going to Orlando. That could certainly happen as well. So I think the Bulls are in a good position as far as if two or three teams, say between four, five, and six, are between guys and guys are starting to slide. You also brought Marvin Bagley, which I think is interesting as well. I would be hard pressed to say he falls out of the top five, but like you had said, I think the hype that was there isn't there as much as it maybe was back in November, December, January. And you can maybe see guys getting passed and taken over him. I don't think he slides to seven. I think that would be absolutely ridiculous if he did. But I think you're right. If Mo Bamba, if Dallas decides to go with somebody like Wendell Carter Jr. instead, or they decide to go with...
Or Dallas might decide to take a chance on Michael Porter.
That's true, too. So outside of that, and then really Orlando, I think you're right about their need for a guard position. And look, they have Jonathan Isaac and they have Aaron Gordon, who most likely will probably come back. Between those two guys, I don't see them taking another big, so that just leaves the Bulls at seven. And so, like you'd said, the offensive game isn't there, but I think he's developing it. And he's a guy that, like we said, shot blocker, rim protector, rebounder, would be amazing next to Lauri Markkanen to spread the floor. And if you can work on his offensive game, which that's the kind of coach we have in Fred Hoiberg right now, offensive-minded, if there's anybody that can help maybe work on that, would be Fred Hoiberg. So I would be cool with taking Mohamed Bamba. The dude's got almost like an 8-foot wingspan. Like, how could you not love that? And to top it all off, I know this doesn't mean a whole lot, but let's be honest, the University of Texas has given the NBA some pretty damn good big men over the course of the last 5-7 years. You've got Miles Turner. You've got, what's his name? Jared Allen in the Brooklyn Nets. So yeah, you've got some pretty good talent coming out of Texas, at least at that center position under Shaka Smart. So I'm excited, and it seems like a lot of other people are excited about the way Mohamed Bamba's game could potentially develop. So if he slides to seven, I think that would be a very, very interesting pick.
Let's just have a fun what-if situation here.
What if the Bulls trade up to number three?
Shut up. shut your stupid face, Jordan. Enough. I've had enough of your bullshit today. No, okay. Which would you rather, because I know a lot of Bulls fans are talking about Michael Porter Jr. right now, who would you rather see slide down to seven? Bamba or Porter?
I think Porter's going to be there no matter what, to be honest. To be completely honest with you.
You think so? Talking about guys most likely to slide. We were talking about the bigs most likely to slide. We left Porter out of that conversation. I think you're right. I think people might be scared of that back injury and the fact that even though he was the projected number one coming out of high school, he basically did nothing in college. Like, did nothing. Lost a whole year. And obviously the combine and those interviews and those medicals will be big for him. And Pax was asked about that too. And given some of the injury history that this team and this front office has had to suffer through recently, if Porter's there at seven and Bamba's gone and all the other bigs are gone, but say Wendell Carter is there and Mikal Bridges is there, what do you think the Bulls do? If they're at seven, Michael Porter Jr. has slid down because Trae Young goes somewhere in the top six and all of the other bigs are off the board. Wendell Carter Jr., Mikal Bridges, and Michael Porter Jr. If those three are all there for the Bulls front office to pick from, who do they pick?
That's a tough one, man.
Like, that might feasibly happen.
That is.
Where the Bulls are picking between those three guys.
And can you, like, if I had to sit back and say, like, would I be mad about any one of those three picks? Probably not. Like, I could make a case for each one of those three guys and why I would be all right with any of those three being on the Bulls roster. I think that's the biggest thing, though, about Michael Porter Jr. that scares me is the back concerns. And it also scares me when you are also going to give big-time money to a guy that just came off an ACL injury in Zach LaVine. So those are some things that are, like, you have to think about. Like, if you're going to build this team for the future, you also have to think about guys that you're taking risks on with injuries already. Like, Michael Porter Jr. having a back problem at 19 is not a good look. So I think that's, like, my biggest concern there. If Mohamed Bamba and Mikal Bridges are on the board at seven and Michael Porter Jr. is there too, I would take probably Bamba over Michael Porter Jr. and then Michael Porter Jr. over Mikal Bridges. For the Bulls, I don't know. It's kind of a toss-up at this point to see what out of those three guys the Bulls feel like that they could entertain the idea of taking. I would say if the Bulls are front office is smart, they shy away from the back injury and they go with maybe the guy that they've seen play already and that are healthy in Mohamed Bamba or Mikal Bridges. So that's just kind of where I'm at least for right now.
Okay, so there's that. But I was saying, assume Bamba is one of the bigs that goes in, you know, before the Bulls at seven. Wendell Carter Jr., Mikal Bridges, and Michael Porter Jr.
Ooh.
Say Bamba's gone. Of those three, are you taking Wendell Carter Jr. over Michael Porter Jr.? Are you taking Mikal Bridges over either of them?
Damn, that's tough.
That's a tough call, and you talk about need versus best available. The Bulls need that wing. They desperately need that wing who can guard multiple positions and hit threes. And Michael, you know, Mikal Bridges might be that guy. He might not be a world stopper, a flashy, you know, high-flying player. He might not be the big ticket draw, but he could be a plug and play at that position that the Bulls so desperately need. And he doesn't have the injury question mark that Michael Porter Jr. has. He doesn't have the potential bust label of so many bigs that are touted highly at the collegiate level and then just can't adapt and develop to the NBA game. I'm with you. I like, the more I've watched Wendell Carter, even though he was playing in Bagley shadow all season long, I do think he has NBA potential. I also think he has potential to be an NBA bust. I think bigs bust, like high lottery bigs bust far more frequently than high lottery players at other positions. Over the course of NBA history, there have been far more busts of bigs than of wings and guards.
It's true. And I mean, I guess my final question to you is, if the Bulls take Mikal Bridges at seven, and say he turns out to be what Luol Deng was, are you happy with that? Even though he won't turn into maybe like the 5, 7, 8 time All-Star that maybe the Bulls were hoping for in this draft, if he turns out to be Luol Deng without the nearly killing Luol Deng, what would you think about that?
Spinal Tap the Wall Day?
Seriously.
Yeah, because I think it was NBC Sports Talk. Their Bulls feed had something like that last night. It was like, hey, you know, 7th isn't all bad. We got some guys there, notably Markkanen, Luol Deng, and Kirk Heinrich. Look, Luol Deng in his own right was a perennial all-defensive team candidate in his prime and a two-time All-Star. That's a darn good NBA player that the Bulls had on some pretty good teams. When the Bulls were tops of the Eastern Conference, it had a lot to do with Derrick Rose, but ask Tom Thibodeau, and it had just as much, if not more, to do with Luol Deng, who was the glue of that team. A great two-way player in the NBA, and a great two-way player who paved the way and taught Jimmy Butler to become a similar player. Great defensively, develop the offensive game, and become a great two-way player in the league. That being said, given what the Bulls were banking on coming into this season, and this goes back to the beginning of this episode and the beginning of this conversation, and again, too early to tell. Nothing was decided last night. Knowing where the Bulls were when they decided to trade Jimmy Butler and go into this as year one of a rebuild, they were expecting, they were banking on, they were hoping to get a top three pick, maybe even the number one overall. To get a franchise-changing player, a superstar-level player. I don't know of any of the players in this draft. I can't say for certain that any of the players in this draft have superstar written all over them undeniably. Sure thing? I don't think there are any sure things in this draft. Closest is probably
Ayton. I was going to say that. I think that's probably the closest.
Closest is probably Ayton. And it sucks that the Bulls will miss out on that. But I mean, like, yes, it's a disappointment if the Bulls don't get a perennial all-star. But if they get a perennial all-defensive team player and a guy who can be a reliable three-point shooter that this team desperately needs, then that's not entirely a failure.
I agree with you. And I guess my question to you is if the goal was to be able to get a guy that has the ceiling of a potential NBA superstar, then do the Bulls swing for the fences and go to Michael Porter Jr. outside of maybe the more sure thing in Mikal Bridges, or outside of, you know, having to deal with the project of Mohamed Bamba and figuring out his offensive game? So then do they swing for the fences and go Michael Porter Jr., or do you take the sure thing in Mikal Bridges? And like you said, I don't think it's the end of the world if he ends up being a guy like Luol Deng, who is a 12-year veteran of this league, like you had said, a perennial defensive player and a two-time All-Star. And like I had said, like, if Luol Deng hadn't got nearly killed by the amount of minutes he was playing in some of those games in the prime of his career, you know, I think he could have lasted too. So that's part of the factor too. So if the Bulls draft Mikal Bridges and he turns out to be Luol Deng, I'm not all that mad either.
Yeah, I mean, if he turns out to be as good as Luol Deng, then getting him at the 7th pick is great value. It's great value at that position of need for this Bulls rebuild right now. And, you know, before people jump on my back, I am not saying that it is still in some regard a disappointment because maybe they're missing out on a player. Had they, you know, more successfully executed this tanking season and had better odds and cashed in on those better odds, that they might be, if they get Bagley or Ayton or one of those guys, getting a guy that turns out to be a not just all defensive team player and occasional all-star, but a perennial all-star borderline superstar. Yeah, it's still a disappointment if the Bulls do end up missing out on a player like that because they accidentally went on a 7-game winning streak in December. That will really suck if that is how this draft pans out over the course of the next 10 years. Looking back to right now, if Ayton is the biggest and best and most dominant big in the league, and Luka Doncic is the next international phenom, sensation, and Bagley is an all-star in his own right, and the Bulls miss out on all those guys, and they have a Mikal Bridges who comparatively is a Luol Deng for the Bulls rebuild. Yeah, that'll be disappointing. Absolutely. But we don't know for certain that that all is going to pan out that way. And we don't know for certain that the Bulls are going to play it safe. And maybe they do take a risk and take Michael Porter. And maybe he does turn into the NBA superstar that people saw that potential with him. There's still so many unknowns and so many variables right now. And it's okay for Bulls fans to be disappointed at how the NBA lottery shook down last night. It's fine to be disappointed, and it's fine to be mad that the Bulls are picking seventh instead of first, second, or third. It's okay to be mad. But just, this goes back to what I was saying at the beginning of this show. Like, everybody take a freaking breath. Nothing was decided last night. We can talk about all these hypotheticals for the next month. And then once we know who the Bulls take at that seventh pick, we can talk about all the NBA potentials that that player has. I mean, people made instant accusations or proclamations about Lowry Markkanen when we took him at seven.
Oh, we've got a whole thread on our Locked On Bulls
Twitter
feed.
How many people were wrong about Lowry Markkanen? So many people, both ways. Just take a deep breath, people. Please.
And see, that's the thing, Matt. Like, I feel like we're going to work hard over the next 4 weeks or so to try to bring on as many people as possible that are connected in college basketball, that understand, have been watching these prospects for a long time. I'd like to hear from them. They were more closely aligned with some of these players, seeing them day in and day out. So we're going to try and get as many draft analysts, reporters, radio hosts, anybody that has spent time on some of these college campuses or other places watching these guys in and out, and then you guys can make your opinion for yourselves. Like, we're sitting here, this is just our opinion about these draft prospects and maybe what the Bulls are going to do, and I'd like to get a better understanding from people that have watched these guys over the last year, 2 years, and even in Mikal Bridges' case, 3 years. Get an understanding of maybe what they think more so than anything else, and just get a wide variety of opinions. So we're going to do that over the next 4 weeks. So it's going to be an exciting time leading up to this draft, and I think we're going to get a little bit more understanding of what prospects are highly touted, especially around after that top five sort of category, here at the NBA Combine this week, which is happening today through Saturday. So we're gonna get an idea of at least maybe some rumblings about what teams think about some of these prospects that were invited to the NBA Combine. So definitely an interesting time.
Oh, wait, Jordan, real quick before we get out of here, we have to give a shout out to Dwayne Wade, right?
Oh, true.
For quoting our Bulls history vid yesterday and ragging on us, saying, oh yeah, like I may have gotten dunked on real good by Taj, but we won that series in five. Thanks, Dwayne Wade, for giving Locked On Bulls some free pub on the Twitter machine.
Hey, he gave us the clap back, and that was good. It's all in fun and games, but he gave us the clap back, and now our feed is just full of Miami fans just saying.
I know. I love it. Like, I purposefully, I put out those Locked On Bulls history vids every Tuesday because they're fun. And it's fun to walk down memory lane. And I knew, like, because I was at that game one against Miami when Taj had those two amazing dunks. So I remember the date. I remember it vividly. So I was like, oh, yes, Bulls history, that Taj dunk. I'm gonna tag Dwayne Wade in our tweet and see if he claps back at us, because I think I can bait him into it. I think, Dwayne interacts with a lot of people on Twitter. Random peoples, nobodies. He'll interact with anybody if they tweet at him. And so I was like, I might be able to bait D Wade here. And he totally took the bait and said, like, yeah, well, that was a good dunk, but we won in five. And then, of course, all of these Heat fans came to his defense, like, yeah, dude, Heat in five. Like, go, big whoop. It's like, yeah, I was just putting out a fun video of an awesome Taj dunk that all Bulls fans love and remember fondly. I'm aware that the Bulls lost that series in five. All I was trying to do was get D Wade to quote our stuff on Twitter and get a bunch of Locked On Bulls press out there. And he absolutely did that. So thank you, Dwayne Wade, for taking the bait. Yes, I know the Bulls lost that series in five. That Taj dunk was still awesome. And when Dwayne Wade is looking at your stuff and quoting your stuff on Twitter, not a bad day.
Yo, Miami fans are just salty because they've got their entire cap is locked up for like the next, 200 years because of all the money that they've spent. And let's be honest, they're not going to win a championship. So they're just a little salty over there in Miami, missing the LeBron Bosch Wade days. But yeah, shout out to Dwayne Wade. He is awesome and interacts with a lot of fans. So I appreciated the clapback. We definitely deserved it. But it's all in good fun. All right, our next target is Bobby Portis now. Need Bobby Portis. Need him to respond. Need to send out my tweet today. But
best bowler in the region, man.
It's happening. I'm telling you, I don't care how long it takes, it's happening. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. We're going to do mailbag tomorrow, so send all of your reactions, your questions in text or voicemail form to 331-979-1369. You can always hit us up on Twitter or Facebook as well if you want to ask us a question there at Locked On Bulls. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, hopefully you have a great day, Bulls Nation. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Hey, fellas, it's Mike again. That's going to be my handle when I call in. Mike again. Just calling to talk about who the Bulls ought to take with the 7th pick. Put a lot of thought into this. And I think that Garpax, with the 7th pick, should take a long walk off a short fucking pier.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.